and welcome to this fourth episode of the new and shiny Boag World podcast, the podcast where we discuss user experience, conversion optimization, digital leadership, and other stuff that crops up randomly. My name is Marcus Lillington, and of course, I am being joined by Mr. Boag World himself, Paul Boag. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hello. I'm grumpy. It's 7 a.m., Marcus. 7 a.m. That's what time I'm doing this. It's obscene. It shouldn't be allowed. But there you go. That's
But that means that you're in America, where you like being.
Yeah. Well, I'm not actually.
Or Canada.
I'm in Canada at the moment, but that's picky. For those that don't know, I spend about half my year out here now. We own an RV, and we just drive from national park to national park, which is very nice. Mainly, I have to thank Elon Musk for this experience, because without Starlink, it would be very hard to work and travel at the same time. But he has unfortunately made it very easy for me. So it pains me, but there you go.
I was going to say, he's not getting a lot of praise from other quarters at the moment.
No, he's a massive dickhead, but there you go. You can't have everything. He's a dickhead, but with nice satellite. So I appreciate that.
There you go. Yeah, I had to get up really early this morning as well, which was a very long time ago for me, Paul, because we had a site going live, which has all been brilliant, apart from one little thing, which has like turned into this sort of... No one can work out what's wrong with problems. So I'm fretting too. You're grumpy and I'm fretting.
Oh, this is
going to be a great show.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful then, isn't it? That's brilliant. I tell you what, mine, I've got a bone to pick with you, right? You begged and connived and manipulated me into giving you a free place on this agency academy. You haven't turned up for one of the meetings yet.
Not one. No.
Not one.
Well, you've by chance the last three Wednesdays and next Wednesday as well. I've taken off as leave. It is purely by chance.
Yeah. You just don't appreciate... The thing is, you never appreciate things you don't pay for, I've decided.
I've taken leave, Paul. I've been off on holiday.
Actually, we could have really done with you in the last one, because we were talking about proposals.
I saw what it was about.
Yeah. It would have been good to have you in it.
But then, no one wants to take my advice on writing proposals. I suppose they might do on the detail, but not on the how organized I am, and just go, oh, I did one like this 6 years ago and it's still in there in my brain.
But
that's no use to anyone else, is it?
Well, a lot of people work in the same way. It was really interesting. I've got to say, I'm absolutely loving doing it. It's been one of the most rewarding things that I've done for a long time. I feel like a complete fraud in it, because like I'm charging all these people to take part in this community, all these freelancers and agency owners, and I'm learning as much as they are, you know, because just getting together and sharing how you work and what you do is just so good. And it just cheers you up, because you're all grumpy about the same shit. You know what I mean?
Well, I do. And also on a similar but kind of a slightly different tack, is that this show is making me feel like it's like a third friend in the room. You know, that's advising me and that I just haven't had for years. I have already recommended two apps from the earlier shows internally at Headscape. I don't know. I'm not sure whether they've been taken on board yet, but it's like, that's great. So when I finally do join one of these calls, I'll get that warm and fuzzy feeling too. But maybe sometime next year.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, the other thing, I think a lot of it is down to this idea of being a part of a community. Because, I mean, especially running an agency, although I think this applies in-house in a lot of companies where you're the solo UX person or the solo designer or whatever, it can be quite isolating. And running an agency and being a freelancer is particularly like that, because, you know, you don't share stuff with other people, you know, you're not like sitting down and talking about how you do things. So you feel like you're just making up shit as you go along. But, you know, it's just been brilliant. It's just been brilliant.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, I mean, obviously, if you want to join the Academy, now I'm turning it into an ad, which sucks, really. But if you want to know more about the Academy, you can go to boag.world/academy. But even if you don't do that, we do also have a Slack community, which is a little bit like it, where we get together and we have a moan. And that one is in-house people and external people. It's kind of everybody together. And that's at boag.world/slacking. But yeah, I've been really, really enjoying myself the last few weeks doing this. So it's brilliant. What have you been up to? Anything interesting?
Having Wednesdays off, mainly.
Why Wednesday? Why a series of random Wednesdays?
Totally, totally weird. I can't even remember. Why was yesterday was too boring for words. Just Michelle and I needed to go and order some boots, and we had to go and
rock and roll lifestyle, Marcus.
Sit down for 2 hours and be fitted and all that kind of thing. So it was like, oh. And she's off at the moment in between jobs and starts up again, new one next week. So it was like, oh, well, I can't do Tuesday. Let's do Wednesday.
Right.
Next week, it's just a golf day that's been booked for the last 8 months. Gotcha. Just randomly. Random stuff. Work-wise, yeah. So we've got a new site gone live today, which was nice after many, many years of doing it. Seriously, years. But it's looking good. And it's one of those, actually, and probably slightly relevant to today's conversation, actually, in the fact that it started off on a bit of a refresh.
Right.
It's a current client, you know, client we've had for years.
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, okay, we'll take a copy of the site and remove the current theme and see what we can do. And it's like, I think it looks great, the new design, but it's basically a refresh, really. Right. But it's taken a very long, for reasons I won't go into here, it's taken a very long time to get agreement on it. But that's been good. Otherwise, yeah, I'm writing some proposals, but they're all kind of looking at how our current clients might move platform and things like that.
Right. Boring stuff.
Kind of, but where I'm going with this, maybe it's because it's in the middle of August, but no, it isn't. It's the middle of September.
Yeah.
At this time of year, it's a bit quiet, but I'm not seeing a lot of, we've got this new project, big new thing. It's just not out there.
No, and it's fascinating. I've been talking to, obviously, a lot of people, both through the agency academy and then also with my coaching clients at work internally, and everybody is quiet. Even the internal people, a lot of people are being laid off at the moment. I've had two of my coaching clients been laid off. So it's a weird old time. Not quite sure why.
We finished the internet.
Yeah, we finished. Absolutely. That's it. We're all done. Wrap it up. Let's go home, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Well, I mean, you know, there's only so many websites you needed, and you never need to update a website, do you? Once it's online, that's it. It's like a poster, you're done.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So what are we talking about this week, Paul?
Yeah.
Paul, I didn't do that in my intro. Thank you for allowing me to do the intro. I must be very grown up these days.
Well, it seemed only fair that I would let you do it once. And that's it.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's
thank
it. You. I like to hear
very
that.
Much.
So, yeah, really we're talking about kind of content this time. Yep. And I've got an app for you that's content related, and I want to talk about some advice about how I go about doing content, because I think it's a little bit different to how many people do it.
Yes, it is, Paul. I read that and I'm like going, wow, this is different.
Yeah, I know, right?
I have opinions.
I'm sure you have opinions. without a doubt, you'll have opinions. But again, this was something that we talked about in the Academy, and people got quite excited about it, which is why I decided to share it. And then instead of an interesting article this week, I've got an interesting person, which is a bit different. But let's start with the app, because that's always a nice, easy one. And I think people like to hear about new apps. Although this one's not really new, and you've probably heard about it before. I know you have, Marcus.
I know it's not new because I wrote about it in 2017.
Yeah, exactly. But it has it has changed since then.
Yes, that was. I'm thinking, went back and looked at it, where I basically said, nah, this is rubbish. And I thought, I bet it might have changed a bit. So I'll let you describe.
The reason that, right. So first of all, let's say what the app is. It's called Hemingway Editor, right? And so it's a website where you can go, you can put in your copy, and it will check grammar and spelling and all of that kind of thing. The reason that you didn't like it before, and I agree with you, is no good for general writing. Let's be clear about that. You know, you wouldn't want to put a proposal through it. You wouldn't want to put a blog post through it. Anything like that, it's no good for. What it is good for, in my opinion at least, is website copy, right? So if you're writing copy for a landing page or your home page or, you know, any kind of marketing / informational page, not as long as a blog post, because I think a blog post is its own kind of thing. But any general information page, it I think is extremely good. Now, the reasons that I think it's extremely good is because it, and this is probably the same reason that Marcus doesn't like it, is because it is incredibly opinionated and aggressive, right? It will push you towards having a very low reading level. So it suggests that you aim for a reading level of ninth grade and below. It will complain if you get long sentences with a lot of conjunctions in them, and that kind of stuff. It always heavily favors simpler words more than complicated words. So, for example, instead of however, it'll encourage you to use but or yet and things like that. Now, which does make it generally not very appropriate for most writing cases, but for the web and for the fact that we only read 20 to 28% of the words on a page, we scan copy, all of those kinds of things, that makes it very appropriate. It's really good for that kind of stuff because it keeps the reading level down, it keeps sentences short, all of that kind of stuff. So it's very, very good. Now, there is a free version which will basically tell you all of the problems and it's then up to you to fix them. It's now, unsurprisingly, because absolutely everything on the planet has now done this, is integrated AI into it. Have you heard this now? That when you go to places like McDonald's, you instead of having a drive-through person that you talk to, you're going to be talking to AI soon. So,
really?
yeah. Someone did it and it was an absolute nightmare, but they still haven't given up on the idea because, you know, obviously...
Dealing with completely random humans, and I use that word... literally,
yes.
Because people will come in and call the thing the wrong name, and then want to slightly change it, and then change their mind.
Yeah,
and it's no chance. Literally, yeah. No chance.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway,
I've gone back and looked at Hemingway, and I had many issues with it, but my main one, which I think may still stand, is that in encouraging you to make shorter sentences, for example, it can lose the sense of a sentence. It means that your simplified version doesn't make as much sense as the previous long version.
Yeah.
So that which was something, because we could share the link in the show notes of my ancient article where it shows lots of examples of where it did that. But I'm about to contradict myself because I often use Hemingway when I'm doing website reviews to show people that look at this massive wall of words and how complicated it is, as a tool to kind of indicate that this is too complicated, but equally you can go too far. I think that's really
cool. And you're entirely right with that. I 100% agree with that. That you know, it's like any tool, you can't just use it blindly. You need to use your judgment over things, and you need to know when to ignore what it's saying. Exactly. And that brings me back to the AI stuff that it's implemented into it, where again, sometimes it does a great job and sometimes it does an absolutely train wreck of a job. And so you need to make a judgment of it. So the AI tools, you know, you can do things like make it simpler, but it also has make it clearer, which I like. And it's quite a good option, that, because it will sometimes make things longer in order to improve the clarity of it, which is good. You can have an option just to make it shorter, make it more skimmable, where it will add in headings and turn stuff into bullets. That's pretty good and useful. And then it's got the normal change tone thing, which I always think it overdoes that. All these AIs, if you say make it friendly, suddenly it's, hey, dude, great to talk to you again, you know, and it's like, no, not that friendly. But it's got some nice extra tools built into it that are useful. So it's a good tool to have in your arsenal, isn't it, basically, like any.
Yes.
And I do often put it like this, right? No tool is going to be as good as a professional copywriter who really knows what they're doing, right? Mm. But so many of the times when you work with clients, they won't pay for a copywriter, which just drives me nuts and is like, you're an idiot, right? You're paying all this money for a new design, which is basically putting lipstick on a pig. You're paying all of this money to replace the system that holds the content, and you're not spending any money on the freaking content yourself. You're a moron, right? Mm-hmm. So nothing is going to be as good as that. But if the client insists on writing their own copy, right, even if they're not a professional web copywriter, yeah, okay, you write great business proposals, you're a great marketer, you're a great academic, you're a great lawyer, whoever you are, doesn't mean you can write good web copy. But anyway, rant aside, if they're gonna write their own copy, then at least running it through something like Hemingway makes them start thinking in the right kind of way. I think that's what it basically boils down to, doesn't it?
Yep. And I guess we're kind of going on into the next part here, but I would say the clients are better at this now than they used to be, but they're still not there really. We still, some clients, but this is pretty rare, but you still get the ones who don't really understand that, you know, we're assuming that you're going to look after the content aspect of the website rebuild, that you keep saying it to them. They're like, yes, yes. And then sort of 3 weeks away, you're like, where's content? The content then? That's rare. That's rare these days. But
it's not just for me. It's not just about... So there's several aspects, isn't there? There's the clients underestimate the amount of work involved and how hard it is to do. And so they don't start it soon enough, or they look at it, feel intimidated by it, put it off, come back to it, put it off, come back to it, and it never gets done. So that's one half of the equation. And then the other half of the equation is writing appropriate content for the web. And for me, that splits into a couple of problems. There's the kind of writing style, if you like, the you know, they have too long paragraphs and not enough headings and they don't make it skimmable and all that kind of stuff. So there's that
typical
element.
Legal stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah, cool. Absolutely. And then there's the kind of conceptual problem of they start from the wrong premise the whole time. They start from the premise of what do we want to say, rather than what do our potential customers want to know.
I'm still not really got to the bottom of this one though, but because lawyers, when they write blog posts, right, they'll write a paragraph that's 6 inches long with no breaks in it. Really hard to kind of, it's normally small type as well, all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they have this really kind of dense copy that we've said, this isn't, you know, it's really hard to follow, blah, 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 blah. And they often argue that, no, this is how I like to, I like to kind of read the, and I read all the time, I'm a lawyer, that's what I do, and this is what I'm used to, and this is what I want to see when I go to a website to read a piece that another lawyer's written. So I'm still like, kind of, should we be applying the general rules to that particular audience or not?
Well, I mean, first of all, that's presuming that the audience is going to read it are other lawyers, which if it is, then
often
that's,
are. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. But then the thing that I often say is that there are a lot of other factors to consider here. So you may think you read like that, and you do if you're reading something you're seriously interested in, right? Mm. If it's something you absolutely care about, you will read it word for word, right? Mm. But if you're just, oh, that looked interesting, let me go and check it out, you've got about 8 seconds to grab their attention and draw them in, right?
Yeah.
And if they're just faced with a massive big chunk of text, they're not going to read it. So that's point one. Point two is somebody might be new to the sector, right? And so are not as fluent as you are in that kind of style of writing. Point three, they might not be speak English as their first language. They might be a Spanish speaker, or they might be whatever else. And so that dense copy is going to really slow them down. Point four, neurologically, we retain and process information that's at a lower reading level and it's easier to scan. Even if you've got a postdoctoral education, that applies, right? Mm. And point whatever we're on now, five, you know, if someone's got any kind of accessibility need, like dyslexia or, you know, anything like that, you've just created a nightmare for them.
Totally aware of those points. And generally, it's a no-brainer. It's like, do it like this because of all these reasons. But that was just a weird one in the fact that the audience was other lawyers. It's people checking us out because we're going to be coming out against them.
I would say it's still not an excuse. That because, and it comes back to this level of interest thing, right? The person that's writing the piece, right, thinks it's fascinating, thinks everybody wants to read it, thinks that it's the thing. Well, other people just have a vague passing interest in it. You've got to draw them in, right?
I'm with now, you, Paul, but it's just an interesting
point. It is an interesting one, and I do accept it, but I can see where they're coming from, but I just think it's bollocks.
But no.
But no. Yeah, let's talk about. So I wanted to talk about content, and I want to talk about the unusual way I've started approaching it. And let me be clear, out of the gate, I'm not saying this is best practice. I'm just saying it's what's worked for me, right?
Raised an eyebrow with me.
Ooh, yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it does with a lot of people. But hopefully, as I talk through it, the logic will become a bit clearer. So, bit of premise. Upfront stuff. One, I've already said this, really want a copywriter. This is, I'm making the assumption you've exhausted that avenue. The client is insisting on writing the content themselves. They're not expert web copywriters, all
which
of that.
Which is probably most clients most or most website owners. That's probably most people.
It is. It shouldn't be, but it is, right? Mm. As I've said many times before, I am not a fan of migrating content from one site to another indiscriminately. I'm not saying that there aren't scenarios where you want to migrate content, but generally speaking, if you're going to redesign a website, you've got to address the content as well. Otherwise, and I've used this phrase once already, it is like slapping lipstick on a pig. That, you know, if you're not addressing the content, you're not going to get massive benefits back from a redesign, purely a redesign. There are exceptions, but as a general rule of thumb. So that means that you need some kind of process in which to assess and refine the content for the new site as you create it. I'm not a fan of content audits. And the reason I'm not a fan of just a straight, let's have a look what we've got and how we can improve it, is because it's starting from the premise that you've got that what you've got is a good basis, right? And it is also very hard to spot what's missing, and you tend to focus on what's there. So
really, really boring.
It's really, really, yeah. That's a big part of it, if I'm honest, Marcus. And you do kind of glaze over, and you go, oh, that's all right, and it's not good. And it's also, like I said, a lot of clients are starting from the premise of what do we want to say rather than what do users want to know. So the first thing that I do these days is I start by gathering questions, right? What is it that people want to know? Now, you could do that through all kinds of ways. You can obviously survey users if you want to. You can talk to the sales staff that are interacting with people on a regular basis. You can talk to customer support staff. You can look on social media. You can look at search terms. Loads of ways of gathering a massive big list of questions. And then From there, I'm looking to prioritize those questions. So really, that's through a process called top task analysis. If you do a search on my website, you'll find me talk about top task analysis quite a lot and how to do that. But basically, you're asking users to prioritize those questions to the ones that matter to you most. And then basically, I start grouping those questions together into pages. So I will then take, all the questions. Let's say it's a university website, right? I'll take all the questions relating to accommodation, for example, put them together on a page. Okay, so now I've got a whole load of floating pages. Then I do create my information architecture, where I start grouping those pages together under sections and subsections and that kind of thing. I do that normally through card sorting. And again, if you want to know more about card sorting, just search on boagworld.com. There's lots of articles about how I do that. And then this is where it gets interesting. So what you now have got is that I will often spin up my content management system, right? Whether it be WordPress or Drupal or whatever it is that you happen to use. And I will just dump in a blank template, a blank theme, basically. So it's just got some crappy navigation along the top, crappy sub-navigation down the side, and content slapped in the middle. And so now I've got all those pages laid out with the questions, bang, 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 down each of the pages. Now, already, of course, you've got something you can test then. You could test your information architecture. Can people find where the question is that they've got on the website?
Yeah.
But once I've got that, then what I'm doing is I'm going back to my clients and saying to them, look, don't worry about writing the full content at the moment. Just bullet point answers to these questions, right? And if you know that there is existing content on the existing website that answers that question, go grab that and dump it in, right?
Yeah.
Or just link off if you want to, whichever's easier for you to do, right? Yeah. So you end up with this kind of messy headings that are your questions, bullet points, bits of content underneath each. And so once that's done, then I will have a look through the existing website and see what's left over, right? What hasn't been brought across, and we can have a bit of a conversation. Well, you know, is it worth bringing that across? You know, can we just dump it? Or do we want to bring it across, you know, because legal obligations or because, you know, we need an archive of news stories or whatever else, right?
Yeah.
But then this is this. So that I've been doing for years and years and years. And then the reason being is you can then hand that to the client. So instead of them starting from a blank sheet of paper where they go, shit, what do we want to say? I'm overwhelmed by this. Yeah. I don't know where to start. You're giving them, here's a load of questions. Here's a load of your bullet point answers. Here's some existing copy. Knock yourself out. Right. So instantly you make the job a lot easier for them to overcome that hurdle of starting to write content. But
making sure that they're covering all the bases rather than just writing a lot of fluff.
Exactly. So that's what I've used to do. But of course, now we've got large language models. Right. So what I do now is take that a step further for them, because it's not a lot of extra effort on my part, right? So I literally grab the content of a page, okay? I go into ChatGPT and I say, write me a draft, right? Yeah. Take this content, write it. It's for a website. This is what the website's about. This is, you know, what the page has to cover. Here you go and write me an initial draft. Now, I've also within ChatGPT, which is what I normally use for this, you can create what they call GPTs, which are like trained GPTs. You've trained ChatGPT on doing a particular task. So I've taken everything that I've ever written about how to write good web copy. I've trained ChatGPT on it, so it does a reasonably good job. It's not perfect, but it's a good starting point, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll use bullets, it'll use shorter sentences. It does everything Hemingway does, basically. Yeah. But you could just take the AI copy and then dump it in Hemingway if you wanted to go to that extra step. That's up to you, right?
Mm.
So then what I do, once it's done that, the problem that you will find is it'll write it a bit like a blog post, right? With headings, big paragraphs of text, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So now what I do is I run it through AI a second time, right? And this time I'll say, what I want you to do is take this copy, break it up into a heading with approximately 160 to 250 character description underneath it, right? So these are what I call content blocks. So then when we design it, a content block normally consists of a heading, description, a link to more information, and maybe an image, you know, that kind of thing, you know. How pages are built. Why am I telling you this? So I run that through. And then finally, if I'm feeling super enthusiastic and the client's paying me enough, and we're doing a bit of SEO work, I'll run it through a third time and say, apply, you know, these keywords to it and that kind of shit. And you could even, if you wanted to, add another level and say, here's our tone of voice guide. Make sure it conforms with that. So all of that runs through. You've now got draft content. So suddenly now the client's job is just to go in and tweak, right? Just to go in and fix, to clean it up. So the advantages of this is, one, the output is normally a lot better than what a client can write, the average client at least, right? And that, by the way, I sound like an asshole when I'm saying this, but, you know, why should a client be good at writing web copy? You know, that's not their job. So I'm shit at being a lawyer, for example. So, you know, it's fine. So, it'll be a lot better than they can write. It's a lot less work for them, and it's more user-centric, right? So it's built around users' questions rather than whatever the hell they want to say. And normally, yeah, they make changes to it, but because the baseline is good, you know, the changes tend to be reasonably good and sensible changes. So I've done this a few times now, and it works. It seems to work really well for me. And it gets around a lot of the back and forth difficulties with stakeholders and clients of getting content for them. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing. Did that sound as terrible as you thought it was going to when you read my notes?
It makes total sense. But it's basically merging content creation, which we kind of do, but it's merging content creation into your initial user research. They are tightly intertwined. Rather than we'll do this bit, IA, and then someone else will deal with content. And of course, both groups will be involved certainly in the IA process, but it's not as driven from that, which I think is great. And top task analysis, that's something we do on every project. You know, drill your content out of that. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Well done, Paul.
Thank you. I'm glad you approved.
I like it.
And to be honest, it's yes and no about it being integrated together. I know what you're saying, but you could stop after, okay, we've created an IA and here are the questions that need to be answered on that page. The extra bit is using AI to write and draft the initial content. And oftentimes, the trouble is, I think, especially if you're an agency, and even if you work in-house, you go, oh, the content writing is not my job, right? I'm not being paid for that or whatever. And so you don't do it. But I think a lot of the time you shoot yourself in the foot by doing that, because there's so much waiting around for a client to deliver content. I'd prefer to spend... Yeah, I mean, obviously, it depends on how big the site is. You know, if it's thousands and thousands of pages and, you know, it's a massive site, then absolutely not. But, you know, if it's a relatively normal marketing site, say, you know, one of the law firms that you work for, setting aside articles and blog posts and those things, which you can end up with thousands of. But the core content, there aren't that many pages. And it's probably just as quick and easy for you to run it through AI and dump in that content as it is for them to write that initial draft.
The recommendations you make on using AI and the different steps are all great, but the key, the the piece of magic here is to base your content from user questions.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Rather than, oh, we need a page on such and such, I'll start writing it. So, because if you said to AI, write some content around some fuzzy kind of stuff like I've just described, it wouldn't be any good. But what you're giving AI is lots of really hard data almost to kind of go, right, that turn these questions and answers and snippets of content into a draft version of a, you know, a blog post or whatever. That's, it can do it really well because it's got that information in the first place.
Yeah.
That's what I like about this.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. That's that's the key, is to build it around user questions. And it's surprising how little that happens in many organizations. You know, and for, like you say, for me, every project I do starts with top task analysis, you know.
It does with us, but we tend to use it to design IA, calls to action, all of those kind of instructive things, or, you know, journey related things, rather than copying for the page.
Interesting.
Because someone else is nearly always doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, no, I get it. I get it. That's so you don't feel it's as a big part of your job. I mean, the other way is I've kind of bastardized top task analysis as well to make it quicker to do. So I use, you know when you, like, you're using an app, I don't know, Dropbox or whatever app, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they often have that suggest a feature, right? Where you can go and you can submit a feature idea and then other people can vote it up and down. Well, I use the same platforms that they use to gather features to suggest a question, right? What do you want to know from the site? So while traditional top task analysis has this whole phase of, right, let's gather a load of questions and then let's get people to vote, I combine it into one thing so that basically you send out a thing where people can suggest a question and other people vote on, yeah, that's a question that I've got. Yeah. And so that shortens the top task analysis process quite a lot, which means that it's less onerous to get a load of prioritized questions. And then what I normally do is I take the top third of those and call them top tasks, right, which is fairly standard. And I'll build my initial draft of the information architecture around those top tasks. And I normally do an open card sort just on those top tasks, right? So 30 odd cards or whatever it is. Yeah. And then I do a closed card sort to see whether that top level information architecture is also going to work for the tiny tasks. So that tends to be how I work if I've, you know, got the budget and time and all of those kinds of normal boring things that ruin every project. But, you know, it's fairly quick and lightweight way of doing it. Not so much the card sorting, but certainly that top task analysis doesn't need to be a convoluted or time consuming process in my experience. So, yeah. Okay, well, that's
good.
Really what I wanted to say about content. But I did want to talk about a guy I've come across recently, right?
Yeah.
I love this. One of the things that, there's a kind of underlying principle here, right? Which is that I am always drawn to people who are outside of my area of expertise. Right. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I love reading Jared Spool's stuff. I love reading the Nielsen Norman Group stuff about usability and all of that. Great. Wonderful. But I very rarely get inspired by people like that or learn a huge amount from people like that, because I've been doing this for quite a long time. You know, they're not going to say anything that's going to blow me away. But I do love following people that are into weird shit or stuff that the weird shit isn't right. That makes it sound perverted, doesn't it? No, are into other areas that I'm not involved in. So, for example, Simon Willison, right? I love following his stuff. I don't understand 90% of what he says because it's super techy and he's really into AI and all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But he inspires me because he's talking about stuff I know nothing about. And I've come across this guy recently who is called Rory Sutherland, right? And he actually
rings the bell with me, but anyway.
Yeah, I think you'd recognise him if you saw him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a big guy, British, quite posh, kind of in his 50s. And he's the co-chair or the vice chair, I think it is, of Ogilvy, right? You know Ogilvy, the big ad agency. He's a creative.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, good ad agency people, the top ad agency people, are problem solvers.
Yeah.
That's what they do. So I'm assuming that's...
Absolutely. But in the way that I've gone with my career is I've become increasingly data-driven, right? Mm. So, you know, I'm into doing A-B testing and usability testing and all of these kinds of things, right? Mm. And he's almost quite anti that, right? I don't want to paint him too strongly as being anti that. He does see value in data, but he does feel also that data can stifle creativity. And he feels that sometimes you need to take a big swing and do something extreme to see if you get a really good reaction and a good response to it. And that data is never going to lead you to that place. So he's challenged me over a lot of my kind of natural leanings. And he's kind of pushing me back in another direction. And he's amazing at coming up with, but yet what attracts me to him is he's all about psychology. He's all about how people think, right?
Yeah.
And that sometimes you have to do what's not logical, but what is right for the way people think. And that just is like catnip to me. I just love this kind of shit. So, for example, he talks about H2 train that's going up to HS2. Whatever. Yeah, HS2. Yeah. That just is costing £20 trillion
or whatever it's
costing. Some ridiculous amount of money. And it'll save 36 minutes on the average trip. And he said that instead of spending all that money, you could offer free Wi-Fi on the train, complimentary food to every passenger that would make that trip feel 36 minutes shorter for a fraction of the price. In fact, he worked out that you could afford to replace every train guard with a catwalk international model to serve you food, right? At a fraction of the cost. And that you wouldn't care that it was 36 minutes longer. You'd want the train trip to be even longer, right? I love that way of thinking. I mean, obviously, it's a stupid, silly example, but I love that mentality.
That's exactly the same way. I used to have a neighbour who was a British Airways pilot. And occasionally on my trips to and from America, I'd say, "Oi, mate, can you get me an upgrade to business class?" And it would be disappointing if it was from New York because it was only 5 hours or it was a really windy night and you'd get back in 5 hours. Whereas if it was from Chicago or whatever, it's like, "Oh, 9 hours or whatever of business class. Brilliant." That's the same. Yeah. That is the same principle. Yeah. Make it somewhere people want to be. Genius.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And another one he talks about is there's a restaurant where as you walk through the door, it's got a sign for people leaving, not for you, right? Saying, "Don't forget to turn your mobile phone back on." Oh. Now, they never say going in, "Turn your mobile phone off." Yeah, but because everybody sees that sign, they see it as the social norm of the thing you're supposed to do in this restaurant. And so everybody turns their phone off without putting people's backs up, without having to dictate to them anything. And again, so fucking clever. Excuse my language, I shouldn't be swearing.
Fantastic.
It's brilliant. And another one he talks about is how ridiculous Red Bull is, right? You know, imagine going in and pitching, I want to pitch you a new soft drink, right, to compete with Coca-Cola. It tastes worse than Coca-Cola. It comes in a smaller can and is priced at twice as much. Ta-da! I mean, that's ridiculous, right?
You've missed a point out there that one of the sales pitches with Red Bull is that it gives you wings, i.e. it peps you up in a big, and it does pep you up in a big way. I know Coca-Cola does as well, but they don't sell it as that.
No, but that's the key. And this is what he was driving at, right?
Yeah.
That Red Bull has to taste bad. And it has to taste bad because it's an energy drink to give you, it's good for you. It's not good for you. It's awful for you, but it gives you that boost of energy. And medicine has to taste bad, right? Because if it tastes bad, it must be doing something good, yes. Right? And again, he's right, isn't he?
I know I'm a right food snob, really, but I don't mind Red Bull. I mean, I won't drink. I'll drink it when someone's after 10 pints. Someone says, "Do you want a Jaeger bomb?" All right, yeah, brilliant. I might have one then. Well, I wouldn't, but when you have one, it's like it tastes like bubble gum.
So, yeah, but a lot of people don't like the taste. And Kath, my wife, she you know always drinks really you know good stuff and eats really good stuff. But if she's driving, she always has a Red Bull. Right? Always has a Red Bull in the car because it keeps her awake, right? And so she sees it as medicine and that's why she buys it, you know? And the final one talks about is how you can have, you know, the opposite. He talks about the opposite of a good idea isn't necessarily a bad idea. The opposite of a good idea can be another good idea. And he talks about how that things like sometimes the answer to getting more sales is to increase the price rather than decrease the price. You know, as it has this perception of higher quality, more exclusivity and all of that kind of stuff. So he's really challenged a lot of my thinking. And I highly recommend checking him out. You'll find him all over YouTube. You'll find him all over Instagram, Shorts, TikTok, that kind of stuff. I don't know about TikTok. I never go on TikTok. I'm too old for TikTok. But well, Rory Sutherland is his name.
Rory Sutherland, yeah. Advertising fascinates me. And the thinking behind it is wonderful. But I've got a little, in the same way that I'm kind of really disappointed in the music industry, it's just awful. You know, it's run by men in suits who don't really have a musical bone in their body. Yeah. And, you know, song hit records have got like 25 people credited to their writing. It's just businessmen making deals. Well, if you do this for me, I'll do that for you. And then we find the prettiest girl, prettiest boy to sing them for me. And it's all just this horrible rubbish, basically, that comes out of there. There's still really good music around there now, but it doesn't make the charts anymore. It can't break through. But advertising's gone the same way. Advertising used to be, not all of it, a lot of it was utter crap, but a lot of it was brilliant, like the Volkswagen adverts with the shutting the door and that, like, well, it's because it's a Volkswagen, you know, because it sounds good and all this kind of stuff. And the Guinness adverts with the surfers and things like that. You just don't see advertising like that anymore. And I loved it. And I think it did add, with Guinness, for example, it made me think of Guinness as a high quality product that I could, you know, I was never going to not buy it, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But why is advertising now lowest common denominator? I don't know. I mean, I'm not expecting you to have that answer, Paul, but it's gone that way. All I can think is that market research has shown that lowest common denominator advertising works. And that's just upsetting.
I mean, I think part of it, there is good advertising out there. It's just, it's few and far between. You know, I've seen some ads recently that have made me laugh out loud. I can't think of what any of them are now. So they weren't that good, were they? But there is a case. I think part of it is that a lot of ad agencies now are doing so much digital advertising where you've got 5 seconds on YouTube, you know, and it counts down before people can skip, that it's maybe removed the ability to do anything sophisticated in that length of time. Yeah. I don't know. It's not a thing I know about. Yeah.
Okay, me neither. It fascinates me. Listeners, you can tell us why.
Yes. Somebody who's more informed than we are. But all I know is that Rory Sutherland, it just challenges the way I think about UX and the conversion rate optimization work I do and how I approach websites and how I word things. And he never talks about websites, not once. I've never heard him talk about websites. But so much of what he says kind of just inspires you. I don't really know even how I will apply it into my everyday life, but it's just one of those guys you want to follow and makes you smile and is worth checking out. So there you go. That's today. We've got Hemingway app. We've talked a bit about my content process. We've introduced you to Rory. All we're now missing is Marcus's joke.
Okay, here we go, Paul. I told my girlfriend that I had a crush on Beyonce. She said, whatever floats your boat. And I said, no, that's buoyancy, not Beyonce.
That is really bad.
Back to the level.
Finally. To the level. You had three episodes of reasonable jokes that I couldn't criticise, but now you found the level. Perfect, Marcus. Thank you very much. There would have been a lot of very disappointed people up until this point that you've redeemed yourself with something that was truly terrible.
I saw it and thought, there it is.
Oh, right. Dear. It's funny the things people get nostalgic about. That, you know, when we were relaunching the podcast, it was Marcus's joke. That's all anybody cared about. Mm-hmm. But there you go. I'm deeply hurt, but they, you know.
No one cares.
All right. No, they don't. Right. And we shall talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much for listening. And please drop us an email. We'd love to hear from you to make us feel like we're not just shouting into the void. Paul@boagworld.com or Marcus@headscape.co.uk.